Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbite. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
That is exactly correct. You are listening to Soundbite on 1180 WHAM. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
Excuse me, I'm Steve Ray.
There's no excuse for you being Steve Ray. And, of course, we have Sean Wright on the buttons with us today. So if anybody screws up, it's his fault. But anyway... We'll be taking your calls at the numbers you just heard, but before we do that, we are, as always, going to the news, and we will start, assuming that Steve has his voice back, with the Macintosh.
Well, it was kind of a slow news week in the Mac world. A couple of interesting things came out. If you remember from last week's news, that Apple won a Grammy for contributions to the music industry. The next day or two, Michael Eisner, chairman of Disney, blasted Apple specifically for promoting stealing of music. So that was an interesting contradiction. Steve Jobs in the Wall Street Journal has reported telling the music industry to lighten up and let people do with their own music what they want, which brings up the question, is it your music? The copyright is held usually by the label or the artist, and specifically there's lyrics and music are usually held by two different people. You may have a CD, but it isn't your music. You can listen to it, but you can't change it in any way. So it's sort of fueling the controversy about what you're allowed to do. And a lot of people talk about the fair use clause in copyright law, but fair use is very specific in education or review.
Right.
So if you're going to write a review for a newspaper, you can listen to the music, or you can, on the radio or TV, you can play some of the music. But if you play too much of it, you now have to pay a royalty. So it's adding to a lot of confusion.
Okay, and a lot of people are upset by that, too. I mean, on the one hand, you know, you'd like to be able to download whatever music you want because, well, you're you.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, as a guy who writes material... Mm-hmm. copyrighted material, I would prefer people didn't steal it either.
And a lot of people point out that if they buy the CD, they should be able to do with what they want. And a lot of people, especially now that it's getting so popular, will rip it onto their hard drive. Even if you own the CD, ripping it onto mm-hmm. your hard drive could be considered illegal because it's not a fair use.
And then if
it's
they're
a backup copy, but backup usually only applies to software. Not to music, so they have to extend those laws.
Well, plus, you know, with the big goings on with LimeWire, I mean, once you rip it to there, and if you've got LimeWire and you've got it in that folder, you're more or less opening it up for everybody to grab it anyway.
There are some bands and some labels that publicly say you can copy our music, share it with anyone you want, pass it around, but they're a very small minority. Most of the bands want to control their music.
Yep.
And it's interesting that sort of in a related story, Harry Connick Jr. Was reported this week also in the New York Times this week. Harry Connick Jr. is received a patent for electronic music display for concerts. So in a concert now, especially with Harry's band, that instead of having sheet music that all the orchestra members have to ruffle through, everyone's getting a monitor and a Macintosh to display the music on screen. And he said it works out very nice because everyone can stay along. They don't have to worry about turning the pages. That can be done by, you know, usually the conductor's assistant. The conductor always has someone turn his pages for
him. Right. Yeah.
So now that can all be linked in with everyone else's computer. The pages turn automatically. But they said there's a couple of side effects they hadn't realized before. They don't have to now edit out the rustling of page turning when they're recording the music.
Right.
And they don't have to light the musicians to see the music.
Right.
So now on stage, everyone's got this cool glow from the monitor.
And Dave, what's going on with you?
On the PC side, Microsoft has just announced that within the first quarter of this coming year, they're going to have the first official Service Pack 1, out for Windows XP. So a lot of the folks that, you know, needed to get some of the other add-ons and everything else, some of the drivers and all that that was missing from the original Windows XP CD. So, say, like the Microsoft keyboard or mouse support that you had to go up to the website and grab them. Now they're putting all this in within the service pack. A lot of stuff that just should have, just like with Windows 98,
right,
and they had to come out with SE, a lot of stuff was forgotten. This is now going to have it back on there.
They rush it to market to get it out,
yep,
so they have something to sell.
Yep.
Right. Right. It's a problem when you own 97% of the market. Who are you going to sell the next thing to?
Well, just alone. I mean, you had to go to the Microsoft website to get the Microsoft mouse support. Hello.
And this automatic Windows update is nice, but not everything is included there. You still have to sometimes,
yep,
manually download updates.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we have to feel sorry for Microsoft because there was a Washington Post report this week. Microsoft plans to argue in court hearings next week that if antitrust sanctions brought by state's prosecutors are granted, the company will be forced to pull Windows XP from the store shelves and be unable to develop new systems.
Oh, darn.
What? The Washington Post quoted the company as saying in court filings that the recently released Windows XP and the business-oriented Windows 2000 system cannot be redesigned to satisfy the state's demands that they be made available in separate versions with and without key programs such as Internet Explorer web browser. This is a company. Now, on the one hand, Microsoft keeps trying to convince us that they are the greatest software house on earth,
mm-hmm,
and that they hire only the best programmers in the universe,
yep,
and so we should all buy their software. And then on the other hand, they're trying to tell us that they are incapable of creating an operating system that does not have an integrated web browser. Let me give you a couple of names, Mr. Gates. Let's start with, Steve Wozniak. He managed it. Give him a call. Then there's Tim Patterson. You may remember him. He's the guy who wrote the DOS you sold to IBM. Give him a call. He has a couple of people who might be able to do it. Jean-Louis Gasset managed it in a product called B. Give him a call.
Which officially
Steve Jobs,
died this week.
Yeah.
Right. Steve Jobs managed it with a little product called the Macintosh you may have heard of. Give him a call.
He knows Jobs personally.
It's perfectly doable. Give those guys a call. We'll give you the time to do that because we're going to take a quick break right now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Sean Wright on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites only on 1180 WHAM. I am Nick Francesco, and I'm sitting here with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Sean Wright on the buttons, and we are talking. Here's a shock, everybody. We're going to talk.
Let me guess.
Yeah, I know.
Henrietta?
Comic. Yep. Bruce from Henrietta, first on the line yet again. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Well, first, I want to thank you guys for taking my call, reluctantly as usual, but...
I know, it's
you know,
terrible.
We got a pick on you, Bruce.
Yes, I do. I realize that. I look like a nose.
No!
Or something else. Anyway, I wanted to let everyone know who cares that there will be no We Do Windows meeting this month.
Uh-oh.
There's a problem with the host site, and so hopefully we'll have... another meeting in April. One is scheduled for April. One was scheduled for March. So we're hoping that everything will be back to normal and we'll have another meeting. Because if we don't have a meeting, then the Rochester Computer Society will be hard-pressed to figure out what to do next.
Oh!
So for this month, you don't do Windows.
Yes.
Ooh, good
anyway,
one there.
You could rename the cider group that. We don't do Windows.
Yes, I have a question for you,
sure,
guys,
yeah,
about viruses. You guys did report a new virus this month,
right,
or this week, rather, which is unusual. And
yeah, there's a bunch, though.
Oh, there's a bunch. There usually is. Now, I use McAfee, and I go on their website almost every time I log in, which is almost daily. Yet there's only one update per week, it seems.
Right. Yeah.
Unless there's a really, really nasty virus out, then it might come up.
It's got to, according to McAfee, it's got to go into the high risk category for them to put out a patch ahead of time. Otherwise, like Klez, that's KLEZ, just came out, it's been out for a while, but they just wound up upgrading it from a low
grade virus to a medium. Until it hits high risk, then they don't worry about doing any updates, and the updates come out on every Wednesday. So I usually tell folks, and that can be either in the morning or afternoon, so I always tell folks, first thing on Thursday morning, go out there and check for your updates.
You know,
what about Norton?
This is Norton does pretty much the same thing. This is, okay, I think, the perfect time to talk about a brand new feature on our website. If you go to wham1180.com and then go down until you see our smiling faces on the lower left. Yes, you have to scroll. Sorry. I find nobody scrolls anymore. I get all these people who write to me and say, you said there's this spot on your site. I said, it's big, you know, it's big words. You know, there's a... They said, well, I didn't say, did you scroll down? Scroll? Okay. So you scroll down, you find our faces.
I don't need to scroll.
Right. You scroll down, you find our smiling faces, you click on the thing. You can send us a comment, and it's a comment, not a question. We answer questions on the air. And
we
or
have
you can
lives.
Go to our website, which is at soundbites.org. On the soundbites.org site, I don't have it linked yet, but I'll have it linked later today. I've created a virus calendar. Every day, certain viruses are set to go off. And I've created a calendar that gives you all of those viruses. And actually, I'm a McAfee fan, so I link to the McAfee site so you can see about the virus. But every single day, there are viruses that are expected to go off. And in fact, today, the 9th, there are five of them. Eraser A, which is a Windows macro. Acid A. Jackal A, which is a Windows macro. Thrasher D. And Hellgate A, which is a Windows macro.
Cool.
All of those are set to go off today. So, yeah, I mean, whether or not...
And where are they going to find that again?
At www.soundbites.org, and you'll scroll down to the right. It's not there yet. I'll put it there this afternoon. There'll be a link to the virus calendar.
Well, thank you very much for that public service.
Thank you so much.
Take it easy, Bruce.
And, yeah, but until they're high risk, they're not going to show up usually in the web-based update. I think they do show up in the... DAT files that you
download. They'll put them in there, but they won't rush out to, you know, they'll, as long as it's a lower medium, they wait until that Wednesday to roll it into the DAT file.
If it's a high, you'll get one that day.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next caller, Ben from Webster. Welcome, Ben. What's your question?
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Dave, I'm going to have to ask you to step away from the microphone for a minute.
Uh-oh. You're going to mention that lousy two-letter word operating system? Just say the lousy two-letter word operating system.
Oh, it is a horrible operating system.
Thank you.
There are two features that Dave likes, so you can't condemn it completely.
Yeah, but what?
They're on thin ice.
It's easy to remove.
Yeah. I would love to remove this beast. Unfortunately, this is on a compact.
Uh-huh.
And you can't remove it, nor can you upgrade it. The OEM does not make the installed disk for anything but ME.
Right.
And, of course, if you go and have the security patches put onto the blessed thing, it crashes the machine.
Yes. Yes, it will.
Isn't that a nice feature?
It is a wonderful feature.
But tell you what, though, there is a trick, and you won't care. Compaq tell you about it, but, yes, you can get around that. But you got to do some tricks. Well, getting a different operating system on it. I've done it.
You have to buy a retail copy of either 98 or XP.
Got it.
Erase the hard drive.
You got to F-disk it.
F-disk the hard drive.
But there's a trick in there, too, because Compaq also puts in a hidden partition.
Most computers' BIOS setup utility is built into firmware on a chip. In Compaq, it's a little partition in the hard drive. So you have to make sure you either don't delete that partition if you ever want to go back into BIOS again, or you wipe it out and you can't go to BIOS. But the trick, going down to 98 probably wouldn't be too bad, but going up to XP, you have to go to the Compaq website, see if they've rated anything for XP. They might not provide you with an XP disk, but you can buy one yourself and get all your drivers updated.
Not a bad idea, but that's not the problem today.
Go ahead.
This ME is my mother's machine. As I said, I wouldn't have that thing in the house.
Did you say it was a mother of a machine? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that too. And she somehow blew out her dial-up to MSN.
Mm-hmm.
I recreated all the dial-up settings, except the little save password box is grayed out.
When you log in to Windows, or when you boot Windows, you have to log in order to enable the password saving. If you've turned off the Microsoft login, or you just hit cancel when you're logging in, you can't save your dial-up password.
Okay, there is no login that I know of on this machine.
So you have to go back to your network neighborhood, or network properties of in the network control panel. There is a section for what client you want to log in with, the Microsoft client, the Windows login, or no client. You need to have some client loaded so you can log in with a password. The password can be nothing, but it has to ask you for the password so then you can use the password saving in your dial-up networking.
Hey, Ben, now it is possible that once you have done that, and once you have dialed in and clicked Save Password, that you can then turn off the Windows login, but the password file is still there and will still be used.
And I've even seen in some cases where you log in with a different name or different password, it won't save it again because now it thinks you're logging in as a different person. You shouldn't have the saved password. You need to put in a new password in your dial-up.
And is your mother still talking to you? Is that why you called here? Because you're in the doghouse and we got to bail you out?
Yeah, I'm pretty much bailing her out every other week with this gem.
Try that. Do the login thing, save the password, then get rid of the login again and see if you still have the saved password.
Will do.
Okie doke?
Okay, thank you very much,
gentlemen.
Thank
you so much. We are going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Sean Wright on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on America's and possibly the world's longest-running computer call-in show, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM. Enright, Steve Ray, Sean Wright on the buttons, and Frank from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure, my pleasure.
I've got a question for you. My son's got a Pentium 900 with 512 of RAM memory. He's running Windows XP, and every once in a while it freezes up on him. He has to reboot the whole system. Got Norton, the antivirus, built-in sound card on the motherboard, and a built-in video card on the motherboard.
Yeah, I think his best bet is to let me borrow the machine for about a year, year and a half. I'll see what I can do to fix it.
On that Norton, did he put in the whole package, you know, the crash guard and all that other stuff, the go-back and all that?
Yes.
Take it out. Windows XP is very stable, and you don't need another operating system in there trying to do its thing, trying to maintain the operating system. The only thing I would leave in there is the firewall if you don't have a router.
I got a router.
Take that out.
The only thing you want to do is just the antivirus software.
The rest of the utilities can be run off the CD if you ever need them.
But the reality is that so many of the things that Norton's system tools does are already built into XP that they're conflicting with each other.
And how often is every once in a while?
Oh, I'd say every 45 minutes to an hour.
That's
more than once in a while. The other thing you might want to do is check the video card driver.
Okay.
Make sure that you are running the exact newest driver for that exact card for XP.
Okay.
Don't, you know, accept no substitutes. A lot of people have been telling me, well, you know, I'm running the NT or the 2000 driver. It works great. Yeah, it works great until it stops working.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So make sure you've got the right driver in.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Enjoy the show, too.
Thank you so much. It's what we like to hear.
Thanks, guys.
Our next caller, Roger from Rochester. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I thought I got cut off for a minute.
No. Not from us.
Okay. I just had to buy a new computer last week. It's a comp. I bought it. It's got XP loaded in it already. It's a Presserial model 5000 or something like that. And I can't get Microsoft Word 2000. I have Microsoft Word 2000, which was in my other computer, and I tried to reload it. It will not load properly at all. It half loads and things don't work right, nothing.
And
I was just trying to figure out why.
Okay.
Because I have Microsoft Works 2000 and that one in perfect with no problem.
Well, Microsoft Works 2000, depending on the version you get, includes Word.
Which is strange and confusing.
Yeah. Which is strange and confusing. But
you've
got Word from the other machine. You're installing it off the original disks?
Yeah. Yeah.
What I would recommend, and I know this is going to be a pain, is I would first uninstall the Works program.
Well, I put Works in later because I couldn't get Word to work right, so I wanted some kind of a work processor.
Where did it stop working?
it stopped working. Well, first it says I can't find a new version of Microsoft processor. So I put in, I happen to have some floppy disks of Word 6.0. Oh, so I installed that. And then I tried putting 2000 in again. And then it monkeyed around, and it took about 5 minutes. You are successfully installed, but it's not. It doesn't work right. There's things missing. You can't even set a margin properly. It says the margins are one way, and they're not.
Okay, well, hold on,
things
Roger.
Just don't work right.
Okay, we got that. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like the 2000 you have is an upgrade, so it required the previous version, your Word 6 first.
Yeah.
But in most cases, you don't have to actually install the previous version. You just have to give it the new version's the installer disk, so it sees you have the old version. So you might have actually caused some other problems by installing Word 6 on an XP-based machine. Your safest bet now would be to uninstall Word 6, uninstall Word 2000, uninstall Works 2000, and then try to just install the Word you're looking for. The other problem is that depending on which version of Word 2000 it is, there's a network serial protection key built into it, and it will not work until you register with Microsoft.
Okay, well, I did that a long time ago when I first bought it.
On a different machine.
And that's the problem. Because it's already registered on a different computer, it will not register on a new computer. It thinks you're stealing it, even though you're not. So you have to call Microsoft, tell them you're installing the same copy on a new machine, the old machine's not being used anymore,
and died.
And they will tell you how to get around this protection and put a new number into the new copy on the new machine.
However, be aware that if that old machine is still working and still running Word and it is connected to the Internet, Word will stop working on the old machine.
I had an HP. It blew.
Then fine, call Microsoft and tell them that. Tell them that you're installing the copy you bought on a new machine. They will tell you how to get it installed correctly.
Okay.
But you do need to talk to them because it's got that network serial number thing in it.
Okay, can I ask you one quick one?
Very fast.
IBM VoiceOver 2000, I can't reload that because they gave us the wrong serial number to begin with, and they sent a slip of paper with the number we were supposed to use, but we lost that damn piece of paper, and the number that's on the back of the book doesn't work. And we emailed them to try to get the right number, and they're not even responding to it.
You probably have to get them on the phone, too.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know what? My wife tried to call them, and they just referred her to some other place, and they said to email it to the... And she wrote the, you know, I don't know what the hell she did, but she emailed exactly what they told her to do.
Well, then I would then call them weeks. And then talk to, instead of talking to just, you know, any tech that she gets on the phone, ask to speak to a supervisor. Tell them, you've been this route before. Could I please speak to a supervisor?
Okay, because we sent them another email.
Yeah, no, this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, it's not an email thing anymore. You need to talk to a supervisor on the phone.
Okay.
And this time when you get the number, write it in the book.
Okay, and I got to get a hold of Microsoft about Word.
Yeah,
right?
I'm sorry, but that's
okay,
definitely a voice thing. Okay.
Does Word have another update for XP?
Yes, Word 2002 or Word XP is a new version again.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Okie doke. Thanks, Roger. Our next caller is Jean from Greece. Welcome, Jean. What's your question?
Hi. I have a Hewlett-Packard Pavilion with Windows 98. I loaded an old CD-ROM of Lotus, and when I turn off my computer, it turns off, and then it goes right back on. And the first thing on the screen is Lotus. I go to my Add and Remove to remove it, and it's not listed under the programs I have.
The old version of Lotus that you load, God bless you, you found a CD with an old version of Lotus 1-2-3.
Really?
Great product. But what you need to do is, what version of Windows 98 do you have, first edition or second edition?
I really don't know. The computer my son gave me as a gift about 2 years ago.
Okay, then what you need to do is this, Gene. You need to, probably, but what you need to do is to get your system up and running, then right-click on My Computer.
That's where I am right now.
You'll see a pull-down menu. One of the choices will be Properties.
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 No, I don't see Properties.
What do you see?
I got, which one do I, I'm under install, uninstall.
No, ma'am. Up on, in, right on the desktop itself should be an icon for my computer.
Yes, that's where I'm at.
Right click on that.
You left
click. Not double click or left click or anything else. Right click.
Right click. Oh.
Now you should see a drop down menu.
Yeah, properties.
With properties. Select that.
Okay.
You'll see a splash screen that has that tells you what version of Windows.
It over in the right hand corner.
Windows 98.
Yes.
Underneath
Windows
does it say
second edition.
Okay then. What you need to do is to go up to Microsoft's website and download the shutdown supplement.
Now where do I find that?
You go to the Microsoft website. And search, use the search function.
No, where do I find Microsoft?
www.microsoft.com.
You mean online?
Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry, through your web browser.
I'm not online.
Well, okay, then you need to find someone who is.
Yeah.
To download this and put it on a diskette for you. It's the shutdown supplement. You can also call Microsoft and have them send it to you, but they'll charge you money for that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a lot easier to find a friend who's online to download this for you.
Okay, download what again?
The shutdown supplement.
Shutdown supplement.
For Windows 98 SE.
There also might be a problem in something that Lotus might have installed that makes your computer turn itself back on. In your computer system setup or the system BIOS, quite often there are power management settings. One of the options is to automatically turn back on after a power failure. And that's typically used by servers that are supposed to be on all the time. So if you're trying to shut down your machine and it powers itself back on, mm-hmm. it might be set in there.
Something thinks it's still running, that's right. why it's rebooting.
And if you want to remove Lotus, a lot of the older programs didn't go into the add remove control panel. You have to go into the Lotus program folder itself and find an uninstall program. Quite often programs will have their own uninstaller and not use the Microsoft add remove.
Yep. Okay, we are going to take another quick break now, but we will be back after the news with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Sean Wright on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on the universe's longest-running computer call-in talk show in English, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. And let's don't forget Sean Wright on the buttons, and we are here with Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, we would like to talk about the poll. Every week on our website, soundbites.org, which you get to through the magnificent wham1180.com website, by the way. There's lots of other cool stuff there. You should check it all out. But then surf your way on over to soundbites.org and check out our website. One of the things you'll find there is a weekly poll. Last week's poll was about MP3s. We were talking about them at the top of the show. Do you or did you or will you download them? And 261 of you voted. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
But I know we can better that, so get out there and vote early and often. And I download MP... Actually, you can't vote often, but you can vote early. And the choices were 123 of you, 47% of you lied and said never at all. I mean, said never at all. Followed by 30% of you saying once in a while, 13% of you said regularly, 7% as often as possible, 2% of you said MP3, and only one of you said only the ones I pay for. So clearly there is a problem out there somewhere. The people who actually do it aren't paying for it. But the nice thing is that only 53% of you are doing it. We'll go and talk about this week's poll, this week's new poll. We want to thank Dan Briggs for giving us this poll. If you have a poll you'd like us to talk about, send it to me. Pollideas@soundbites.org. Lord knows I could use the help. This week's poll is about screensavers. Which ones do you use? And the choices are the ones that came with your machine. Some favorites that you found. You make your own. You get new ones all the time. Or what's a screensaver? I personally am running two right now on different machines. One is from United Devices. They're searching for a cure for cancer by using the spare cycles on your machine. That's winding down. So I'm also going back to SETI at Home. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Those of you who were listening to Paul Harvey at the top of the show heard him talk about what are we going to say to the people if there is extraterrestrial life, what are we going to say when they get here? The reality, Paul, is that we've been saying it to them for a little over 50 years now as our radio waves shoot off into the ether.
The first image of Earth that an alien will receive is Adolf Hitler opening the 1936 Berlin Olympics.
That's exactly right.
That's the first television transmission.
That's right.
Jeez.
And so, well, actually, the first one was Felix the Cat. But at any rate, the reality is that we've already done that. And
I dated myself a long time,
but then I got married. Anyway, we are... you can join the search
again
for
tonight at 8 o'clock, folks. He'll be appearing.
That's right. You can join the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and if you like, you can join the Ask Nick SETI team. I also run a website called Ask Nick. We have a SETI team. If you go to the website, there's a link there as to how to download the software and join the team and join for the search in extraterrestrial life.
One thing we also want to remind folks: when you do visit our website, please take the time to register. We're not going to sell your name.
In the forums.
In the forums. We're not going to pass your names on that out. We just kind of want to know where our listening audience is coming from. Matter of fact, we just had one person from Illinois sign up. So just put
somebody from Arizona, Biker Chick 1. Biking Chick 1.
Definitely. Put in your city and state, and even if it's from Rochester, just so we can grasp on where our listeners are coming from.
Of course, the question is, how does she hear the show since she can't hear the echo? Oh, I almost said
that. No, don't go there. Not until next week.
We do have forums up there. For those of you who cannot get in to answer our questions, you can usually ask a question in the forum and somebody will venture an answer. Sometimes it'll even be one of us. So join us at soundbites.org for more fun than you can shake a joystick at. Our next caller is Tom from Parenton. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi, I have this ancient two-dimensional CAD drawing program from like the mid-80s.
Sure.
And, you know, I used to use it to draw, you know, like, do market studies and town lines and demand areas and things, but I like to use it to lay out my gardens.
Sure, who wouldn't?
Anyways, but the problem is I got this Pentium, you know, HP Pentium 200, 32 megs, and when I try to do this MS-DOS program, you know,
yeah, right,
in full window, I'm getting a mouse problem. Now, I'm looking at it, and it says, oh, be sure to run, you know, your Microsoft or Logitech mouse driver, you know, mouse.com or msmouse.com.
Right.
You know, but when I run the program on this Pentium, I got no mouse at all, so I have to use the cursor, which is a real pain in the ass when you... Excuse me.
I'm sorry you can't say ass on television, on the radio.
Part of the problem there is that there's a mouse driver built into Windows, so
right,
you're trying to load another mouse driver.
On top of the CAD within the CAD program.
There's an easy solution for this, and it's only going to cost you $25.
What's that?
If you go to gardencomposer.com, and we're going to put that up on our website in a little bit.
We'll put a link up there in a little while.
At gardencomposer.com, there is garden design software, 3D Garden Composer. And if you order now, it's the low, low special price of $23.95.
It'll work in Windows.
There's also a couple of more professional landscaping programs.
Yeah.
LandCAD is one of them. And
3D landscaping.
Nemechek, I can never pronounce their name. They have one called... Vector.
That too.
Vector works landscape. But
what's nice about this one, it's got 6,000 plants in it, 100,000 images, 400 3D objects, 100 animations, walkthroughs, 3D walkthroughs.
The problem you want is your elevations, because I got ridges.
And you'll get that in this.
Topo.
Yeah. I think you'll be able to get this in it. You know,
take a look at it anyway. It'll tell you a little bit about it and what it is.
There is a demo, I believe, on the website.
Yeah, there's a demo on the list. It's only $23.95.
Great.
See what it's got.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Can't hurt. There you go. Yeah, it does say it does multi-level thises and that, so... give that a try. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob. No, not Rob. Rob nothing.
No,
Rob's
this is Sean Wright
doing something exciting. This is Sean Wright on the buttons. And me, Nick Francesco, on the universe's longest-running radio computer call in. Can I qualify that anymore? Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Yes, it is. I am Nick Francesco. He's never been wrong about that in all this time. But I am sitting here with Dave Enright.
The
first week he was real wrong. And
he really mangled your name.
Yeah, well, that's what do you expect? And then I'm sitting here with Dave Enright and Steve Ray. We have Scott Wright on the phones. And before we get back to the phone, I would like to thank Jeff for the new headsets. And now we're waiting for the network connections in the arc. Oh, Dan from Fairport on the line. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Hi, Nick, Dave, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You're welcome.
I have potentially two problems here. Once in a while, my system that I built myself has Windows 98 Second Edition on it. Will blue screen on me when I boot it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I, shut it down, start it up again, and I get past the problem. I ran a Norton System Works 2001.
You ran it. You didn't install it.
No, I have it. I have it installed.
Yep.
And I went into a system maintenance, Norton Diagnostics for hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And I periodically get, I always get, memory test failed at high end of memory.
That's what I was going to say. If you're getting blue screens and you said you built this yourself.
Yeah.
You might want to, how much memory do you have in it?
326.
And are they exact same number. Memory?
No.
There you go.
You might want to take out the
odd one.
The 128 and leave the 256 in there?
They don't necessarily have to be the same capacity, but they have to be the same specifications, both PC-100 and both PC-133. That's the best way to handle it.
Okay.
If you take one of them out, try it for a while,
and see if it clears it up.
If the problem goes away, you know it's in the other one. If the problem stays, swap them and see what happens.
Right. Because memory has a lifetime guarantee, so you can always return it.
What did you do, have the old 64 meg?
I had started out with 64, added 128, and then a 256.
Yeah, yeah. You want it to, and so right now, no, that's more than 384, but that's okay. What you have now are three completely disparate types of memory in the system, right?
Right.
Let's start with the 256 and the 128.
Uh-huh.
Get rid of the 64. See if the problem goes away.
Okay.
If it does, you win. If not, take out the 128. If it's stale there, then you've got a bad 256 meg chip.
Does it matter which slot they go into?
Yes,
sometimes. Yes, most of the time. You'll see.
It depends on the motherboard.
You will see on the motherboard.
It's an ASUS.
Yes, they are marked. Sometimes you have to look, with a magnifying glass, but you will see it'll say DIM 1, DIM 2, DIM 3.
Yeah.
They put them either onto the side of the board or along the edge of where the DIM is soldered into socket.
You may find that putting the 256 in the first slot, the 128 in the second slot, the 64 in the third slot.
Here's one other thing you might do. Look at that little thing called the manual.
Yeah.
It tells you what slot are what.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it may be that your motherboard can't take that particular combination of RAM.
Right, sometimes the smallest one has to be in slot one. Sometimes the biggest one has to be in slot one.
Okay, so swapping around might work.
Right, and picking something that's close to one of those configurations isn't going to do it.
Yeah. Okay.
So, check the manual, though. That'll always tell you which slot.
Okay.
Slot orientation.
Second question.
Oh, quickly.
Okay. Is there a way to step through the boot messages?
Yes, sure. With Windows 98, just hold down the F8 key.
F8?
F8. Keep hitting the F8 key. It will bring you to a menu. And one of the options, I believe it's option number 4, is to do a step-through.
Step-by-step confirmation.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
You got it.
Bye.
Okay, our next caller is going to be Bob from Macedon. Welcome, Bob. What's your question? Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question?
I have a HP Pavilion that's a couple years old. It has Windows 98, and it has a DVD drive. And when I try to run the DVD drive, when it starts to load, I get a warning message that says another application is preventing DVD playback.
But it doesn't say what?
It has no details. It's just a little yellow triangle with an exclamation point.
Is this 98 Second Edition?
I don't believe so.
Do you know what, if you're using hardware or software DVD decoding?
I really don't know.
Yeah, that
makes a difference.
Hardware's faster, software's cheaper, so it depends on, and it's usually a daughter card on your video card.
if you have a hardware thing. There's one of several things that might be happening. First is that you have two different DVD players in your system.
Like the Microsoft player and then the player that came with the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
that card.
And both are set to autoplay DVDs.
Okay.
In order to fix that, the easiest way, I don't know if there's an easy way to do that, but try uninstalling the software that you install to play DVDs and see if they start up in Media Player.
Okay.
Because Media Player wants to control everything.
Yeah. You might also want to get some check the website for that DVD player to see if there are any updates.
Not specifically the DVD drive itself, but the video card that controls the decoding of the DVD information.
Right, whether it's hardware or software. And if it is software, see if there's a newer version up there.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Our next caller is going to be Brian from Fairport. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Okay, so I got two problems with my mouse. I have a Logitech laser mouse. And it's got an adapter to work in a regular port. Is it a serial port?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also supposed, without the adapter, it's supposed to go USB. I have two USB ports. Both of them work. Mm-hmm. I got it. You know, they're both being used right now.
Get a hub.
Well, yeah. No, the thing is, even with just the mouse plugged in there, it doesn't work. I have to use the adapter and go USB. So
use the adapter and go serial.
Is there a switch on the mouse to switch it between serial and USB mode?
No.
When you got the mouse, was there a driver that came with it?
Yes.
For USB?
It might have had two drivers, a serial driver and a USB driver.
And if you loaded the serial driver and did not load the USB driver, it will never work under USB.
Okay. It might be. Okay. Now, my next problem is every time I try to start in MS-DOS mode, it comes up saying it can't find the mouse, and it freezes there.
Right. And there's a couple of reasons for that, the most important one being that the driver you loaded is Windows only, and so there will be no mouse in DOS.
Right.
I'm not sure what you need a mouse in DOS for anyway.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Why would it stick at that screen and
not
give me
the
prompt?
You need to do is to look in the config.sys and the config.dos. And autoexec.dos programs that are on the root directory of your hard drive, /,
mm-hmm.
and see what's in there that might be requiring a mouse.
It actually might be the next command in the config statement. You might be getting the error message from the mouse command, but then some other command is trying to load and actually freezing.
Right.
In fact, you might want to try the step-by-step confirmation we just talked to the previous caller about.
Could it possibly be that I'm in selective startup. I'm not processing autoexec or...
That doesn't count if you're restarting in DOS mode. None of that happens.
Okay. Gotcha.
One thing, though, I would like to tell folks, because I've run into this number of times. Folks just see the two slots, the USB slots on the back of the machine. They think they got to go out and buy more slots. Belkin and a number of other companies, folks, do put out USB hubs. And you can just go from this hub down to one of the USB ports, and it now gives you 8 other ports that you sit there and hook up other USB devices.
And if you really want to get crazy, one of the devices you can hook to a hub is another hub.
Yeah.
The USB specification allows for 127 devices, and I've actually saw on the web once a guy who did that just to make sure.
He found 127 USB devices?
Well, there were probably several keyboards.
Yeah, right.
thanks, guys.
Okay. It really makes things a lot easier because a number of my clients have been able to eliminate those ABC switches.
Yeah, exactly.
I've also seen a lot of motherboards will put USB connectors on the motherboard that you're supposed to plug into a front panel on your case.
Right.
The case may not have a front panel USB connector.
You can actually buy them. You can buy a little thing that fits into one of the 5 1/4 inch slots.
Yes, to bring it out.
Stuff out. It's very cool. We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Henright, with Steve Ray, with Scott Wright on the buttons, and with me, Nick Francesco, on the universe's longest-suffering running computer show, Soundbites on 1180. What did I say?
You said Scott.
Scott Wright. Who's Scott Wright? Sean Wright on 1180 WHAM.
Want a better?
Just the longest running computer radio show. Because I don't think there's a longer running TV show or, like, you know, mental image show or whatever else there might be. So I think we're it, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Sean Wright on the buttons, and Lee from Henrietta on the line. Welcome, Lee. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Listen, I bought a 60-gig hard drive. I had a 30-gig hard drive. One bought a 60-gig hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the 60 my master and the 30 my slave. I booted up. I reinstalled my 98 SE. And when I try to go to the second hard drive, it's not available. And when I F-disk it, it says... partition is a primary DOS, but system is unknown. Is there any way to get that back to a FAT32 and get my files off of there?
What? If you F-disked it...
The files are gone.
Yeah. The files are gone.
Well,
I just did F-disk and I did display partition.
Okay.
Oh.
And when I display the partition, it says that it's a primary DOS partition... But the system is unknown.
Were you using any sort of boot manager?
Disk manager or disk mangler.
Or partition magic's boot manager.
Or file compressor.
Max Blast.
Max Blast?
Yeah, Max.
That's the problem.
Yeah. You have to reload that Maxtor driver software on your new hard drive it recognizes the old one.
Easiest thing to do is this. If you've got a brand new machine, you might be able to go into the BIOS and pick the drive you boot from.
Yeah.
Boot from the 30.
Okay.
That should work. You should see your 30 and the 60. Move everything over to the 60, then go back into the BIOS, switch them back to the 60, boot from the 60. Now you can really F-disk and reformat the 30 without Max Blast software, and you should be fine.
Yep. That's the way he's got to do it. Otherwise, if it doesn't allow it, you've got to change the jumpers on those two hard drives temporarily to let the 30 gig be the bootable.
The master again.
Yeah, the master again to move the files back over to the 60.
I tried that, and it starts the boot, and then it just hangs, and all I get is a flashing cursor.
Yeah, I think you did more with F-disk than you thought.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
It's possible. Also, was this 30 in an older machine?
No, it's in the same machine.
So perhaps your BIOS...
The only thing I did, it
doesn't support... Well, why were you using the Max Blast in the first place
if the
BIOS supports a larger hard drive?
Did you have to use Max Blast on the 60 gig?
The 30 gig may have come from an older machine,
So it needed this special driver to recognize a drive that large. Probably. That's probably where Max
came from. I'm just wondering if he's got two different versions of Max. You know, did you have to use anything for the 60 gig?
No.
It could be that now the Max Blast on the hard drive is incompatible with the BIOS in the new computer.
Yep.
Because it's...
No, it was in that computer.
No, he said it was...
Yeah, it was in
it. It may have come from an old one, but it was in that one and was working in that one.
Right.
How about make that one the master primary and make the 60 master secondary? For just temporarily, and then worry about your other drives later once you get the data back and forth.
Well, that gives me something to try.
Yeah. Right.
There you go.
Yeah, at the very least, try taking the other drive, the 60 gig, offline entirely and see if the 30 will boot.
Right.
Well, I've tried that.
And it still won't.
I get a flashing cursor.
Some drives have a distinction between master and single, that you have to set a jumper in a third position for single drive rather than the master with no slave.
The only thing, yeah, Maxtors, I believe you do.
Yeah, Western Digitals, too.
So try that, and let's see where we go from there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Bob from Fairport. Welcome, Bob. Where's that coming from?
Yeah.
Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. Well, I actually have a comment and actually a possible solution for the one man who called with the problem with the memory and running Norton Systems Works 2001 and receiving the error.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I love it when our callers call in with answers. That's my favorite part. Thank you.
Norton Systems Works 2001, over 256 megs of RAM will not test over 256 megs of RAM. So he always receive the error. So
now that you say it jogs my memory.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go.
So it's not necessarily an indication that he's got a problem with the memory.
That's great. Oh, and therefore, Dan from Fairport, if you're still listening, better go download MemTest 86. There's a link on our website, soundbites.org. If you scroll down to the lower right, you'll see, I heard the website on your show, dot, dot, dot. or, for those of you who speak English, Ellipsis. And then you can go find that. It's called MemTest 86. Download it, follow directions to create a boot disk. It takes well over 24 hours to test your system, but you will know what's wrong if there's anything wrong with your memory. And that's a great answer, Bob. Thanks. What's your question?
I have one question. Why are you against Norton Systems Works? I got to tell you, I've got it. I've had it for years. I've got the 2002 now, which I do.
The one client was running Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
And with Windows XP, it's already rock solid.
Oh, yeah. I'm running Windows 98 second edition.
Then you're fine. The problem is that under XP, some of the features in System Works are already in XP.
Right.
So running the two of them together often causes conflicts.
Okay.
Other issue with SystemWorks is that because there's so many pieces of it, mm-hmm. it is loading a lot of system resources. And if you have a marginal machine to begin with, loading all the extra stuff can slow it down.
Okay, so
what we like, we install Norton Antivirus because you need that part.
Right. You don't have a problem with it except for Windows XP.
Intrinsically, in and of itself, I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. I have a problem with it when your machine has another problem.
Right.
I say take it out and see if the problem goes away.
No, I agree with that. Yeah. I agree. I thought you were in general.
No.
There was
a great product. It's just that you have to use it correctly.
There was a specific piece of it called CrashGuard that they've since discontinued
because
it caused more crashes than it protected against.
Yes.
And you have to worry about the fact that in a lot of cases, people are running older versions of SystemWorks on systems that it was not designed to work with, and that causes problems because it does such low-level stuff.
And various motherboards can have issues with it because of the way it wants to handle things versus the way Windows are doing it. So that's why you might hear us from time to time tell folks to uninstall that to see if it corrects the problem. It's easy to reinstall the software.
Well, and you can run the utilities off the CD when you want to and not have to have them loaded all the time.
Right.
Well, the problem with that, it doesn't save the changes it makes to the system.
Right.
And that's why
true.
I caution you not to do that, because if it removes a DLL file that you really need, you can't get it back.
Right. Good point. Yep.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks a lot, guys.
I appreciate it. That's the kind of call we love to get. We just get to give people our opinions. We don't have to actually say anything that people will understand. Jim from Canandaigua is on the line. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Well, thank you. I've got a fairly easy one.
Yeah, the questions are always easy, Jim.
The questions are easy. It's frustrating, however. I want to build a model train layout, and so I decided to use a CAD program that I picked up some time ago in the bargain bins called CAD Complete by SoftKey. And I'm running an E1 machine with Windows 98. It's taken me about 40 hours to learn how to be comfortable with the wonderful capability of this little program. But when I go to the file menu and hit print, it brings up the printer a dialog box, and everything's okay. And I hit go ahead, print. And nothing happens. It just goes away and doesn't do anything. Well, it does come out and say printing, but it really isn't.
What version, what printer do you have?
I have a Lexmark 3200, and it acknowledges, the dialog box acknowledges that that's there, and that printer works fine.
On everything else.
Do you know if this CAD program was designed for Windows 3 or perhaps even DOS?
Earlier, I think.
Yeah, see, it doesn't know how to handle the commands for that print driver.
For a Windows-based printer,
program.
Not a DOS-based printer.
Right.
It's interesting because if I shut down the printer and shut down the computer and then bring it back up, it says the printer has two jobs. And if I say, do you want to print them, and I click yes, it says, I'm reading it, there was an error writing to LPT1 for the printer.
Right, because it still
Lexmark
doesn't know how to talk to it.
Lexmark 3200 series color fine.
Yeah, it's not.
What you can do is
resend a file.
You can take a screen picture of what's on your screen with a little print screen key.
Yep.
And that takes a picture, puts it on a clipboard. Then you can open MS Paint or any other painting program you have and paste that picture in and then print from that program.
Yep.
It's kind of a long way around.
Well, somebody was telling me how to do that, and I've experimented, but it just seemed like an inordinately long way around.
Mm-hmm. You may need to find a newer program.
It isn't worth it. I mean, it's just fun to play with.
There's actually a game called Railroad Tycoon where you design railroads and then play them.
Better. There is a CAD program designed for model railroaders.
Mm-hmm.
It's called X-Track CAD.
X-Track-CAD?
It's at Silub.com, S-I-L-L-U-B. We'll put that on our website during the break.
Okay.
.com. It does cost $65, but it is four windows. It includes turnouts, sectional tracks, transition curves, libraries of cool little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It actually lets you manipulate track just like you would actual flex track.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't do things with it you can't do with flex track.
Mm-hmm.
It's got tunnels, on-screen ruler, parts lists, 99 drawing layers.
Cool.
It's elevations, train simulations, car inventory.
Wow. It was an old program for the Mac called Macanuga Choo Choo.
Macanuga Choo Choo, I remember it well.
It was like 1985.
That's what I searched for first. I didn't find it. But this program, which I'll have on the website in a couple of minutes, will do what you... It does cost $65, but boy, it looks like it does everything. And it's available for every version of Windows and Linux, for those of you Model Railroad fans running Linux.
Jim, do you remember the old, up by Edgerton, the old train station, Model trains that used to be up there?
Oh, sure.
Used to go down. It was underneath the Stardust room.
There is a Model Train Society still in Rochester.
Yep.
I see their meetings every now and then. I haven't had a chance to go, but maybe one of them can call in with what software they're using.
I already belong to the Genesee G-Gauge Railway Society.
There you go. Well, then you can show them your great new software. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Sean, Nick, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. That's right. Get down. Get funky. Get up. Take a shower. Nick Francesco is in the house. Well, all right, in the studio with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Sean Wright, and Tim from Greece on the line.
Man, we're on radio. Folks wouldn't want to see that live.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
Love your show, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I got Windows 98 SE.
Mm-hmm.
What's the advantage of going to XP Pro?
It's more stable. It's got prettier colors.
And do you have enough horsepower, though, first?
That's the important question. What you want to do is check out Microsoft.com/HCL, which is short for Hardware Compatibility List. That's also on our website, by the way. If you want to see if your machine, all the pieces and parts, you probably won't find the machine itself listed. So you'll need to know what your video card is and what your motherboard is and all that, this and that.
You know, it shouldn't take too much to write a program that scans that list against your computer.
They have one. And you can download it from Microsoft. It's the compatibility test.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that there, too, but you can also check the list. And so that'll tell you whether or not you can move safely to XP. The other thing is take a look at the box, the XP box, and then whatever they tell you is the minimum requirement,
left. Double it.
Yeah, double it.
Yeah, I've done that.
There are some disadvantages, too. The main issue is that XP is a real operating system.
Yep.
So you have to be a system administrator a little more to know how things work under the scenes. Only administrators can install programs, but users can run them. Right. So there's a little issue there. But in general, it's much more stable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. There you go. Thank you. Our next caller, Dave from Irondequoit. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
The remnants of a lot of software. I've been getting kids' games from the library,
mm-hmm.
and just trying it out before I go to buy things. And so I don't have the disk anymore to run the uninstall necessarily, and yet there's bits and pieces of a lot of different things on the computer.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And they don't always appear in the add remove programs
right.
command. So I'm trying to figure out how can I get rid of all these
remnants. On our website, we've got a program called Easy Clean.
A link to it, actually.
A link to it, and you can download it, and that will go through the registry. It will also, there's various functions within it. It'll clean out the registry to things that are no longer needed. You can look for, it'll also look for files that are no longer needed, duplicate files, and it does a good house cleaning of the system.
But also, in a lot of cases, the programs themselves will have an uninstaller in the program directory.
Quite often, they don't seem to work if you don't have the
original
disk.
Yeah. Easy Clean is the way to go.
And will that get rid of the icons also?
The icons are just connections on. They're just shortcuts. You can just dump them right now.
Oh, okay. Just take them right off the desktop.
You got it.
Trash them.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next caller, Paul from Holly. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hi, Nick?
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Hey, Nick, I've got a question. It actually involves my daughter's computer.
Yeah, right, sure.
Well, actually, this...
A friend, wink, wink.
She has AMD 750 running Windows 98 SE.
Right.
When she boots the computer up, the Windows folder opens up on the desktop. And I've looked in the startup menu and the start folder, and you know I've gone into MSConfig and looked in the startup there, and I can't find any reference to that opening.
Yeah. Every once in a while.
Well, Windows is supposed to remember the folders you left open and closed, and then when you reboot, go back to that situation with the same ones open or closed.
Right. What you want to try doing is this. Close that window.
Okay.
Then click on the background. Hit F5.
Okay.
The theory is that refreshes the screen, if you've clicked on the background, that refreshes the screen and saves the state of the Windows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to promise that works, because once Windows gets it in its head to do something, you're doomed.
But that's
the theory.
Really?
So give that a try. Let us know if that works for you.
Okay, just a quick point for those people that don't run antivirus programs. She wasn't. And 2 weeks ago, I found two viruses on her machine, Chernobyl CIH and W32 Weird.
Yep.
She had 340 files infected.
Yep. Yeah, it's really very important. Anybody who's listened to this show for more than half an hour and doesn't know to run an antivirus program has not been paying attention. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, thanks, Nick.
Appreciate it. Next caller is Eric from Menden. Welcome, Eric. What's your question? Eric, are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
My son's got...
another one.
My son's got all sorts of Excel and Word files on the hard drive that he saved over, several years
of
doing homework, doing projects. And I wanted to get them off, and a lot of them, most of them he wanted to save. So I went to move them, copy them to a zip drive.
Yeah.
100 meg zip drive, mega zip drive. And I would highlight a whole slew of them and drag them over to the zip drive, and it would, save them up to a point, and then it would tell me that the disk was full.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can only fit 99 files on the root directory of any disk.
Okay, so it doesn't, because when I would put the zip drive in and check my computer, it would tell me that the zip was only 17% full.
Yeah, it's not the zip drive itself, it's the directory. If you create a folder, you can put an unlimited number in it. Up to the limit of the disk. Yeah. But you can only fit 99 files on the root directory of a disk.
So then I should create a folder on
create
the
Create a folder, put them in there, you're on your way.
Save it over.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Eric. And now slowly we turn to Marty from Niagara Falls. Welcome, Marty. What's your question?
Good afternoon. Got a Gateway computer. We put a new hard drive in. And it's a 40-gigabyte Maxter drive, and the computer doesn't recognize the whole thing. It'll only recognize...
You're probably going to need a BIOS upgrade.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's different utilities you can go to on the Gateway website, and they have the... you're going to have to put in your model number, but they'll tell you... the version that you have, and you're going to have to download a file and flash the BIOS.
If it's not flashable, you may actually have to buy a new BIOS for the computer to recognize larger drives.
That would come from Gateway?
Mm-hmm.
Or from somebody else.
Mr. BIOS.
Yes.
Write that down in case I don't have it on the website. MRBIOS.com.
MrBIOS.com.
Right. Check Gateway for a free one first.
Okay.
Yeah. Always check them for free.
And
also check them for the price to buy one, then check that against Mr. BIOS.
Okay.
The other thing about it's actually Microid Research BIOS. The other thing with Mr. BIOS is that you have to know enough to know to get the right one.
And the problem is a lot of them, though, nowadays, anything from Pentium 2 on up, they're soldered onto the motherboard and your SOL.
Yeah, this is a Pentium 2.
There is software that
then you should be able
earlier.
To flash it. Pentium 2s, usually you can flash.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, again, call Gateway. There may be an update to the BIOS that they can direct you to download.
Okay, and on the McAfee virus scan, the 6.0 on your website, you have that thing about the memory on boot up.
Right.
If you don't have a problem, should you not bother?
Correct, right. Okie doke.
Thank you.
Thank you. I apologize to everybody who's called we didn't get to. I want to thank everybody who called. For those of you who didn't get to us, of course, you can not only call us here next Saturday, but you can call our news Friday nights at 7 o'clock. We do a show. Sometimes Dave and Steve are on it. Sometimes I'm on it, and you can call them Friday nights at 7 o'clock on our news on Time Warner Cable. And I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray.
We want to thank you.
You.
Thank you so much. And I
thanks for coming in today.
thanks for having me. And I want to thank Sean Wright, who ably kept the buttons working for us. We'll be back here next Saturday at 12:20. God bless America. This is Soundbites, only on WHAM 1180.